Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here today to continue our expectations series, and we're going to talk about Sanusi Kane and Mark Andrews today. A couple of players at different ends, obviously, the spectrum. Joining me to do that is Bobby Trossett. Bobby, how you doing?
Ken, it's great to always return the favor. We know, you know, Sarah and I love having you on and getting your perspective, and I've been following along with this series as well, so glad to be a part of it.
Oh, I appreciate that, Bobby. Thanks for listening. So let's talk about Sanusi Kane first. Drafted round seven, number 250, a 6 foot 207 safety out of Purdue. Really known as being a strong safety and a run fit safety, less of a coverage guy.
Yeah. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you think about a late round safety in Baltimore is some of the development success that they've had in those later rounds in recent years. A Chuck Clark comes to mind. Man, if Deshaun Elliott had stayed healthy, he certainly comes to mind. And then, of course, most recently, who got a great contract this offseason in Cincinnati, Geno Stone. So, you know, those are just three names within the Lamar era, if you will, that certainly come to mind. Each one of those guys had hurdles that they had to obviously climb and surpass ultimately to. And all three, crazy enough, are still in this league. So I just think that speaks to what Ozzie and then this front office, and of course led by Eric DaCosta now, does from a scouting department. And then most importantly, though, when they get in from a development standpoint too.
So it's a remarkable run that goes back to the dawn of Ravens history. They're 1996. They drafted Ralph Staten. He falls into that category as well. Certainly, they've had a number of great dimebacks come out of the sixth, seventh round, or even UDFAs, including Mitchell, who Anthony Mitchell returned the field goal 90 yards against Tennessee, and Chad Williams, Hiroki Nakamura. It's a very long line of dimebacks, and it was Ozzie's wheelhouse to get a safety in that round. I, in my own personal opinion, Sanusi Kane does not fill the need for the back end cover two guy, something he had a lot of trouble with at Purdue. In fact, his entire career allowed 9.8 yards per target, which is very bad. Yeah. And 130 career opposition passer rating. Yeah. So not numbers that would inspire you there. I think, though, he was drafted with the new kickoff rules in mind,
which we know is going to come with a bunch of different fireworks, right? Like that's going to lead to a lot more firepower. And when I look at Kane, I'm with you. There's some coverage issues in 2022 for sure. So it kind of brought him back to the line. And I think that, you know, it's very clear to me, Ken, that outside of Kyle and Marcus, there's a major opportunity for safety three, if you will, for 2024. I don't see Sanusi being in that mix. I would liken it to maybe somebody that's not on the roster right now, or if he should stay healthy, and Ardarius Washington, a former undrafted rookie who just got a knack for the football and somebody that I think is just a tough-nosed football player out of TCU. He's been showing some signs based on what I've read from beat reporters over the course of, you know, obviously training camp pads have not come on yet, as you well know. But that's encouraging to me. And I wonder if he's got the leg up right now. I know, granted, it's mid-June, but I don't see Sanusi really kind of competing for safety three right out of the gate. Do you?
No, I think he's a Dimeback project, and I don't think, and I say special teams guy. I think literally that's what the guy has done, and I think they went with a flyer at number 250 for a special teams player when they probably would not 2 years ago or 1 year ago even, because the coverage game had been diminishing in terms of its importance. We have all these onside these kickoffs being fair caught. Or caught in the end zone because teams just want to bring the ball out to the 25-yard line, get started, and the punts. Many fewer punts are getting returned than ever have. So we're at a point where the coverage games don't mean that much. But then the Ravens, I think, had probably had a hand in developing the new rules set that went, and now they're probably excited about it. And I would trust them to be able to exploit these new rules.
Yeah, right. Well, implemented by the XFL, right? Or at least I should say adopted by the NFL originally, that came from the XFL. And Randy Brown, who's worked very closely with Justin Tucker, obviously, over the years and developed that operation that Justin always speaks of when it comes to just the system that they work within that's had so much success over his tenure. These guys have said that they've watched, like, I can't remember the press conference from a couple weeks ago, but I think they've watched like hundreds of XFL highlights to try and master this thing. And if that's not Ravens special teams-esque, I don't know what is.
Yeah, it definitely is something they spend time on, and it's great to see. Back to Kane for a second and his place among the additional safeties. We'll get into whether or not his place on the roster is set or not, but I think one of the things that comes to mind is I'm a little surprised Daryl Worley has not been re-signed. I did not see up as far as recently as about 2 weeks ago that he'd been signed by anybody else, that he remained a free agent. I don't know anything specifically about his current condition, recovery from last year's injury, that sort of thing, which may be holding him back. But I'll tell you what, he did the job very well at times where the Ravens had a bare hole there in terms of playing that split safety on the back end. And we saw it from the very first preseason game last year when the Ravens won their last in a row out of 24-25, whatever it was, that they Daryl Worley controlled the football game in the second half. He essentially was manipulating the quarterback, be able to move exactly the spot he wanted to. It seems like he'd be a very natural fit to be on this team another year. And it seems like even with him, the Ravens are a couple safeties short.
For sure. One of those glue guys, right? I mean, it's kind of a cliche phrase, but I think the Ravens have so many of those guys that represents what that term means, you know, asked, does whatever's asked of them. And maybe they want to see what they have just in terms of, you know, the initial part of training camp. Let's get pads on. Let's take a close look at the Canes of the world. And then we know Worley's going to be available, right? Maybe mid to late training camp, we can bring him in. We know that he's a seasoned vet. We know that he's, you're right, Ken. He has been super reliable. And if you told me that this time last year, that he would be that kind of reliable, I would have told you, I don't know about crazy, but I certainly would have been surprised.
Yeah, it was the kind of thing to see at camp last year. He just moved into that safety role. He was there pretty much from the first day of camp, and it was just outstanding. I mean, they had a whole bunch of other guys rotating through slot. But Worley's play at safety, and he was on the second team because Hamilton and Williams were both there as well, but he's on the second team, but got a lot of play, obviously, in the preseason, looked great there, didn't miss any tackles during the season, which is one of the issues, by the way, I have with Washington, is that I think he's big enough to play where you can play downhill in the slot and hit people low and get there when the ball is arriving. At strong safety, you don't have that luxury, and it's much harder to be a tackler at his size in the NFL. So I'm a little more concerned about him in the spot, but we'll see. You know, he's one of the choices, and hopefully it works out for Ardarius at one spot, or maybe as the backup slot corner, backup slot to Hamilton. I'm really saying it could work there too. So I really love the way he played in the last preseason.
Right. And I'm just getting myself refreshed on his measurables. You're not kidding about the undersized nature of Ardarius Washington, which is part of him, though, right? Like, that is a part of his aura. He's 5'8", 176, or at least he was at one point. Maybe he's fluctuated a few pounds. But, hey, I'm 5'8", with shoes on. So that's tough sledding. But I think that also speaks to how much inner dog he's got, right? Like, he's proven that he can be a force in this league. He just, unfortunately, availability has not been something that he's been able to hold his hat on.
You look at 5'8 safeties playing the NFL, the first guy comes to mind is Bob Sanders. And one hell of a player whenever he was on the field and just could not stay on the field.
Right.
But he was a great guy with the Colts.
And how often can you can go every team, probably every sport, and you ask yourself, what if? Mm-hmm. The first one that comes to mind for me in terms of Baltimore, Jimmy Smith. What if? Yeah. What if had he stayed healthy? And certainly his career was nothing to, you know.
It wasn't bad. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. But what if? And you can go, I'm sure, hundreds of players that fit that.
We could. I'm just going to go one at corner because it's the biggest injury, and it's like the Keaton Mitchell injury, unfortunately. That's Lardarius Webb at corner for the Ravens. Just was the best corner in the entire league in 2011. I think he probably had a Hall of Fame career derailed by injury. All right, I'm sorry. I'll let you respond to that.
I'm just saying, what if, right? That's perfect.
Okay. Let's move on to what a good season is for Sanusi Kane from your perspective.
Good season is he makes a 53 right out of the gate and is a special teams contributor consistently. Now, for his standards, and gosh, let's all knock on wood on this, if he ends up being a day-to-day contributor and is the safety three at some point, then there's probably been significant amount of injuries, mm-hmm. right? So nobody wants that. He'll take it. And he'll run with it because that's life in the NFL. But I would say a good season for him is that he makes the 53-man roster, and he's an every day, every Sunday special teams contributor.
Okay, I think that's a good one. I set the good season at the 60th percentile. So basically, what I'm saying is I think his chance is probably less than 50% to make the team. I say he has a healthy preseason, a solid run play, and few glaring coverage mistakes in camp or the preseason that keep him in the Ravens' plans for 24, but starting on the practice squad. He might be on the practice squad. He might not, is what I'm saying. Even if he does not make the team, but he flashes as in a role. And the roles I'm going to offer as a possibility is kick coverage or dime, I think are the two big ones, in camp or preseason. And I think he's a potential to float as the top special teams player available in the practice squad. Now, the Ravens make healthy use of the elevations on a week-to-week basis. They're allowed three for free. Sanusi Kane is not the kind of player who gets taken away from you by another team. So I think they can go with three activations for him and then move him up to the 53 if they like what they see. If they don't, they can leave him down for longer and wait till, you know, circumstances force them to do it. But my expectations at the good level, again, at the 60th percentile, are just fairly minimal for Kane for 2024. And by the way, they cut Geno Stone as a rookie too, which is still boggles the mind to me and still boggles the mind how lucky the Ravens were to get him back after leaving him like that.
Right. And then he went down to Houston for a cup of coffee, right?
Yep. He went down to Houston.
Think about that.
The next year, they got him back. They signed him back to the same contract he had, which is just it's a remarkable set of circumstances. But you know, that's one of these cases where I don't think you can take credit for the Geno Stone draft value when you cut him and somebody else takes him. I don't think you can take credit for it anymore. And the Ravens obviously clearly, you know, had a guy they liked, but that's the way sometimes.
Man, and Ken, I wish, and I only, you know, sometimes the vocal minority can take up too much headspace here, so I don't want to generalize too much, but I wish more of the fan base would. I know it's tough when Geno ends up in Cincy, right? And of course, PQ ends up in Pittsburgh, which is the biggest stinger of them all just because of how polarizing he's become for right and for wrong. But yet, what a great story Geno is. He just got paid. And I wish that more fans could sort of put their fandom just aside for a second to acknowledge and appreciate what he's done for himself. Because to your point, I had to kind of get refreshed on that when he left. He wasn't even part of the Ravens' plans early on, which is fascinating. And you wonder what happens with Kane, because very similar players in terms of what their strengths and weaknesses are coming out of school.
Stone, a fantastic splits field safety. So I'm going to differentiate them a little bit from that respect. But yeah, it was okay. I guess here's how I'd feel about it. With Kane's loss, if he gets taken by another team or some other team figures, hey, you know, the Ravens liked him because of this, and we saw enough in preseason to think he can cover kicks, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, honestly, if that happens. Sure. With Stone, I was pissed that he got taken away from the Ravens. Sure. All right, so let's go into a great season for Sanusi Kane? What does it look like to you?
A great season. So I had a good listed at, he makes the team and is a special teams contributor. A great season is that, unfortunately, like we've seen in recent years in the secondary, there are injuries. And he gets an opportunity to essentially show that strength in numbers, right?
Okay.
He's a contributor on special teams. He's obviously on the 50, maybe not initially, to your point, maybe he's not on the 53-man initially, but due to injuries, he kind of gets thrust in there somewhere in the secondary. And essentially, hey, drink from the fire hose, young man.
Okay. Yeah, that it could certainly happen. It always is at risk. A great season for me. Makes the team as a special teams ace and dime candidate. Active most weeks and sees some minimal time on defense, but still less than 100 snaps. We see flashes on special teams and something that keep him in the Ravens' plans for 2025. I think that last thing is the most important, that the Ravens see something that they just got to have him for 2025. If honestly, if he can make that a kind of impression on the Ravens, I think that makes the season great right there.
Right, because then he can at least start to look at his future a little bit more clearly, rather than, hey, he might be headed to, might not even be on this roster, or in Geno's case, might be headed down to Houston. So, yeah, I hear you.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Mark Andrews, the other side of the coin here, and obviously the main event here. He'll turn 29 on September 6th, kind of at a crossroads season here. Might not be a crossroads, but people, I think, don't realize how much pressure there will be on the Ravens to cut salary next year. And he is one of the candidates with who carries a big price tag. And of course, Isaiah Likely is his running mate, and in a way, his competitor, in a way, his teammate, is both of them signed through 2025. They might keep them both for that period, or a decision may have to be made after 2024.
Yeah, this is one of the most compelling things, right? Because I think what you see online is, what have you done for me lately, from parts of the fan base? And the unfortunate hard truth for Mark is, over the last couple of years, I'm not sure we'd be referring to Isaiah Likely like most of us do as a budding star if not for some of Mark's unavailability the last couple of years. Isaiah has taken the opportunities of which he's been given and run with them. We remember coming out of Coastal Carolina what he was sort of tabbed to be, and he has, I mean, far exceeded or met those expectations to determine, you know, based on where you were looking and what those specifically were. He is a wide receiver in a tight end's body. He is fast. He is nimble. He has a good pair of hands. And I think he's great on the fly, right? One thing that we know Mark and Lamar have done extremely well, maybe as good as anybody up there with the Mahomes and the Kelseys, is the off schedule stuff, is the street ball stuff, is just making stuff up on the fly when things break down. And you can't really teach that. And I see some of that with Isaiah and Lamar. And I think they have a great rapport based on what you see on social media, based on what you see in their respective press conferences with one another. I think there's a friendship that's off the field. And now moving forward, Todd Monken's biggest question, and Sarah and I discuss this often, can you live in a world where both of these tight ends can coexist together on the field?
That is the $64,000 question. And I want to defer it for a moment to talk about Andrews specifically and what kind of happened this last year. But one of the things I talk about on this show all the time is Andrews has decreasing value from his marginal targets. So you get decreasing marginal return, a concept that's, I know, familiar to a lot of people. But what I mean that is that the additional targets he got over 21-22 were targets that were much more likely to be contested or bailout targets, where it's a lower quality of throw, maybe an off-schedule throw that doesn't have quite the same probability for success, although he's fantastic with Lamar under those circumstances. But fewer targets on the margin really occurred in 2023, even before he got hurt. So let's look at the numbers. In 21 and 22 combined, he had 266 targets, so 133 per year in 32 regular season games, 8.3 targets per game. That dropped to 6.1 in 23. So, you know, a lot of the stuff about having 11 personnel on the field, having more receiving options available, really did benefit Andrews in terms of reducing his total targets. He went from 8.3 to 8.9 yards per target, which is very important. But more importantly, even, he went from a 91.5 passer rating throwing to him to 135.7, a career high last year. The entire Ravens tight end group as a whole, by the way, was over 140. 12 touchdowns, no interceptions to that group in this last year. Just an unbelievable season that is unrepeatable. It can't be done at that level. But it's a real reason why, with Andrews specifically, less can be more in terms of targets. Now, the other side of this, and I have to go on, I know this is a little long-winded, Bobby, but bear with me just a second. The total tight end targets dropped from 195 to 110 for the season. So you had 12 touchdowns, zero interceptions to the tight ends, passer rating in excess of 140. So a lot of Monken's preachings kind of came through for the tight ends in terms of making the defense defend every blade of grass. It worked out better for them in 2023, but they had to cut to from 195 to 110 targets. So you're pissed that they didn't get more tight end targets when the more tight end targets really hadn't worked out the year before.
Now, is some of that related, though, to Mark went down that Thursday night game in November, right?
Yep.
So some of that has to do with Mark's second half unavailability, no?
Likely picked up basically all of his targets, or almost all of them. So I guess what I'd just say, it's reduced tight end usage in general. The 2022 Ravens in particular, known for being the heaviest tight end usage team of all time between the four, literally in decades, there had not been a team that had played the kind of thing. 2.30 tight ends plus fullback plus OL6 per play. So the highest that had happened in recent years was 1.98. It was like 6 years ago or something by the who was it? The Vikings in 2019, the year the Ravens had a really big running year. Mm-hmm. But I think it's been literally, maybe since the 70s, it may have been never that there was ever a team that ran as heavy as the 22 Ravens. So I think a lot of it was really that, and using likely as kind of a pseudo wide receiver that year that led to a lot of it. But in this year, it was very sharp cutoff, and 110 targets is fewer than Andrews had. Certainly 2 years ago when he had 140 some, it's a big cut in total targets for the tight end.
Absolutely. His presence is something that's talked about a lot, right? Mark's presence, the relationship with him and Lamar, he's referred to as the security blanket. He's referred to as somebody that Lamar can lean on, which has been backed up, whether it's the eye test, the numbers that you point out, pre-injury and things of that nature. Do you think that Mark's presence with these multiple tight end sets that we're expecting this upcoming year, and this $64,000 question that you refer to as, can they coexist together? Can Mark's presence and Lamar's over-leaning on him actually take away from the two of them as a duo?
I think it's possible. I do. I think that if you're going to look at a player who may have suffered from the presence of Andrews, the guy I'd look at is Bateman. That, he gets a lot of the space budget for the offense. Why? Well, he's the only receiver on the left side a fair amount of the time as the X receiver. He's given all kinds of space to run routes, to go deep, to go short. He is the best route runner on the Ravens. There are conflicting separation metrics from last year, but generally speaking, I'd say he does a very good job of wiggling the opponent's in corner at the top of the route. And it really hasn't been something that Lamar has seen fit to take advantage of, or that schematically the Ravens have been trying to go to Bateman as much as they could have. And in truth, Bateman had kind of a lousy year in some respects last year, but Lamar also overthrew him a few times on deep balls. Whereas if that was Odell Beckham, I felt like the ball would have been tossed up there as more of a quote unquote 50.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
50 ball, but a ball where he's trusting Odell or any receiver to go up and get the ball. But I think you make a good point. I think it's very possible that, you know, having both of them on the field and Andrews getting the first look a lot of times, and especially it's not always the first look as the play is schemed. It might be the first look as the play is extended.
Right.
That does have a risk.
The other factor in this, and granted it was November as I referenced, and then he rushed his butt back. We all know that. And he came back in the AFC Championship game and was, dare we say, a non-factor. Mm-hmm. Whether he should have been back or not is up for debate, but now he's had a full offseason to recover. You mentioned that's a lot of NFL miles on the tires. That's a significant ankle injury. One of the things that I'll be watching along with Marlon Humphrey, Kadri told us last week that there's some reason for concern in his mind for Marlon, just in terms of some of the nagging or lingering things that John Harbaugh referred to last year. And of course, there's a number of other things that we'll be watching, but I want to see what Mark's stamina is. I want to see what Mark's cutting looks like right now with that ankle, because he's been super, super quiet this offseason. That doesn't necessarily mean that anything negative. I think he's so incredibly laser focused at this point in his career, because I think he feels like a lot of people feel like it's Super Bowl or bust. But I'll be curious to see what that ankle looks like. 8 months removed, something like that. 7 or 8 months.
He played on January 28th. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Obviously, very frustrating nature of the injury with Wilson last year. It's the kind of thing you never want to see. Really don't like the hip drop tackle and how it occurred. Do you have any feelings about that directly? And about, obviously, Wilson has been someone who uses the hip drop tackle and has done it before. Any specific feelings about that?
You know, I remember at the time being pretty indifferent about it, and then you started looking at the numbers. And you want to know why I was indifferent? Because I was like, okay, I want to look at the numbers, because I wasn't familiar with the statistical numbers based on past injury. Mm-hmm. But then I was also kind of in the camp of sort of that old school way of thinking, man, you know, at some point here, it's going to be a two-hand touch, you know. But then I started looking at those numbers. I started doing a deep dive, and I'm like, you know, this is somewhat of a trend here. And I think they probably made the right call. How about you?
The number quoted is that they're, you're 25 times as likely, 2,500% more likely to get an injury with a hip drop tackle than with other types. Yeah. So that enough should be a player safety concern they should act upon. And, you know, let's hope that is better in 2024, because the other things that they're doing about flagging it or whatever, I don't think any of that is enough. I think they have to. They have to come up with very meaningful, well-enforced rules for doing it. So.
And I'll tell you what, too. Would Logan have been able to get him down there if not for the hip drop tackle? Mark's probably a strong dude. Yeah. I don't think so. Yeah. Right? Because you're trailing from behind, and Mark's going 100 miles an hour, and he's what, 6'5", 250?
Yep.
I don't even know the numbers off the top of my head, but like, you're not getting him down, so it will present challenges for I guess he's a linebacker, right? So for DBs, it'll be probably a bigger challenge than it will be for linebackers just based on size. But I don't think 89 goes down there without that technique.
It's often the thing cited by defensive players is, what am I supposed to do to tackle him into the end zone? And the hip drop tackle, one of the things you do is you pull the player back towards you and roll on him. So it's a, they have enough information now with all of the information they keep and the shoulder pad sensors and whatnot, that they know exactly where the players are. They could see exactly what's going on. The league's under a microscopic focus in terms of what's happening on that field. If you can make it so easy for the receivers to catch the ball, that's an area of the game where I wouldn't have any problem if they made it a little tougher. But changing the tackling, that should be something that should be front and center if there's this kind of an injury risk involved. So hopefully they get this right.
Agreed.
All right. Going back to Andrews for a second, he was not flagged in 2024, which, by the way, is a really big deal. Kelsey, for example, had 10 flags during this season. And one of the things you'll see is if you look at PFF's numbers, he doesn't show up that great as a blocker. I thought he had a really good blocking year this last year again. But Gesicki, Waller, and Gray, Noah Gray, are the only three guys with more snaps who weren't penalized at tight end. It is a big difference. It's a big deal not to be penalized. And by the way, if you're looking at PFF numbers, they have a significant underweight to penalties within their thing, which basically says Kelsey's not getting penalized and Andrews not getting the benefit of having no penalties nearly as much. So when you look at that jaundiced eye, I would recommend with regard to those things without looking in that penalty column.
Now, he played in 10 games. Mm-hmm. So that's probably less than that group, but
467 snaps without a penalty.
Yep. Still a hefty sample size, which is an absolute plus. And he just brought me back to earlier on in his career, when one of his things that he constantly talked about in terms of his room for improvement was blocking. Mm-hmm. So there's no doubt that it's night and day from years ago when he first came into this league out of Oklahoma. But to your point, I still think that there's always room for improvement in that department. But gosh, has he answered the bell in pretty much just about every other area?
Yeah. Yeah, he's certainly reduced lots of his shortcomings. I think he had four drops this last year, if I recall. And it was a mix of things. One site has him for three, another for four. Either way, it's okay. But he had seven total OPIs and holding calls previously in his pro career. So getting rid of those is big. I always talk about this, but post-snap fouls, much, much more serious than pre-snap fouls. Even if they're both for 5 yards, with it like comparing an illegal downfield on the pass for a lineman to a false start, much rather have the false start, because the false start is 5 yards at the only, and the IDP is 5 yards if that's the best result for the defense. If the play is better, they take that. So the optionality of penalty is very important. And Andrews has avoided those post-snap fouls in this last year, so that was really nice to see.
Man, you think too, just you commenting on the drops statistic that you mentioned, like more often than not, I'm happy to live and die by Mark Andrews drops, because the volume is through the roof. And yep, for the most part, the guys answered the bell when it comes to high volume requirements that have been asked of him over his years as essentially Lamar's top target.
Yeah. It's all his rate statistics are very good. The one thing that had been a problem in recent years was there were a lot of interceptions on balls thrown his way, but that's really not Andrews' fault as much. Well, occasionally he'd have a tip ball. We remember the 2019 game against Tennessee in the playoffs and that happening. But more often, it's just a second defender collapsing on down to mark as a safety, yeah, or even a linebacker, you know, who's very cognizant of the window and it's closing, is moving into a spot to contest Andrews because Jackson has not thrown a predilection to throw it to anyone else.
Yeah.
So that obviously, you know, is an issue. And I think your points earlier about having him on the field at all, as it reduce other receivers, is, you know, a legitimate possibility it's going to be hard for them to find tight end snaps for everybody this year. Because if Andrews played two-thirds of the snaps and likely played two-thirds of the snaps, and they had a third of those snaps were in overlap, a third of the total snaps were in overlap, I think that would meet my needs. But if I look at that and then I look at potential snaps for Kolar, for Ricard, I don't think I can make that work. I think right. that's too much for both of them. So, you know, unless there's a complete commitment to 12, boy, I don't know.
It's an embarrassment of riches. I think it's an easy argument to call them the deepest tight end room in the entire league. And then you stack on to your point, Ricard, who can do a little bit of everything for them. So, and the last thing I'll say about just those drops and Mark Andrews' high volume, you think about the degree of difficulty coming across the middle where, sure, you have your eyes on the football, but your peripheral vision has you staring at a linebacker coming in 100 miles an hour, and maybe you have a DB that's trailing you hard, and yet, more often than not, he's coming down with the football and taking a beating while doing so. Yeah. So I have so much, like I said, I'll live and die. I'm willing to live and die by Mark's occasional drop because of what's asked of him, and he consistently answers the bell for this team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, been a revelation. That's why he's the trusted target. Is he'll do whatever it takes to come down with the football. I had four things I wanted to see him improve on in 2023. Tell me if you think he got this. By the way, these are all directly matter of public record. You can go back and listen to the old pod if you want to. But the first is less is more, and that was just getting to the point that, you know, they went to 110 targets from 195. Second is reduced interceptions, improve yak. Per pass, it was up to 4.6 this last year, which was pretty good for him. With fewer contested catches, definitely had fewer contested catches this last year. Bateman and Flowers must be able to get separation to create space for Beckham and the tight ends. I think they actually did a pretty good job of that. Bateman didn't get a lot of targets himself, but I think they got some decent space. And the scheme slash Lamar must include better spread of the football, including extended plays. But that was one of the real successes of 23, was that Lamar found other people on extended plays. He found Bateman on one. He found Aguilar on several additional guys other than Andrews that he could throw the football to.
Well, how can you not think when you start telling me about the first thing I thought of there was that chart after week 13 or 14. I can't remember where it was, what specific week it was, but it charted all wide receivers that had to meet like a minimum threshold of snaps. Mm-hmm. And Rashad, in terms of degree of separation, you might be envisioning the chart that I'm talking about here,
yeah,
was way out in front of the league in terms of degree of separation outside of Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
And so something's got to give, right?
Yeah. I can explain that to a certain degree. First of all, it should be clear, but everybody is working from the same exact data from the shoulder pads. So even though multiple people are reporting it very differently, and I mentioned conflicting separation data, the separation data for Bateman as measured one way is very high, as measured another way was in the 30th percentile. Okay. Now that's unusual, but if you think about what Bateman's style is, it's usually separate at the top of the stem, come back for the football, or go across for the football, and his initial separation would be highest. So they might be measuring it when the quarterback releases the ball. They might be measuring it when the ball is passes the receiver or gets to the receiver. But either way, those measures are providing two different angles on this.
Gotcha.
And so that's where I was very interested in that data, and I really want to understand exactly how it's measured. I am the kind of guy who asks questions about this. Like we've seen top speed measured. What does it mean? Over what period of time? After over how many clicks of their thing? Because they have data every tenth of a second. Do you average three or four of in a row or whatever? And you know, one thing about speed is I know it's distance over time. All right. Right. So there has to be a time in the denominator, damn it. Tell me what that time right, is. So. Right.
No, this is the context that we need, right? Because we can see those all 22 highlights, you know, being posted and going viral about Rashad that show the immense amount of consistent separation. But we don't necessarily have that synced up with where the football is, where Lamar is at that time. And then so what does that chart ultimately show you? You know, well, he's got some separation, but we don't know where in that progression, yeah, of any single snap. So that was the first thing I thought of with those observations that you had there. And hopefully it continues for him because he ain't going anywhere anytime soon, having signed that extension.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's look at a good and a great season for Mark Andrews. Start off with a good season. What does that look like for you?
A good season is that he plays in all 17 games. I'm going to say that for both good and great, because I just hope that, you know, for his sake, that he's able to kind of fully recover from this. You know, good, I think, is probably just south of 1,000 yards receiving for him, somewhere in that 800 to 900 category. There's a lot of mouths to feed. I'm not saying that, you know, he's not capable of, we all know that he's more than capable of doing a whole lot more than that. So I'd say a good season is you play in all 17 games. They're spreading the football around. So you fall in that somewhere to 800 and 900 receiving yard season, maybe 5 or 6 touchdowns to go along with it. And obviously that means that Isaiah Likely is going to be very much a contributor as well.
All right, that sounds good to me. I'm going to be very similar, healthy for 15 plus games. Since he hasn't played every game, and he's certainly been great at times, I wanted to reduce him for a little bit from that. Again, 60th percentile playing about 15 plus games, I think, is reasonable. Quality of targets decreases slightly as Monken finds a happy medium in terms of tight end efficiency, but passer rating throwing to him stays 105 plus. The 135 passer rating is not sustainable. You're not going to have zero interceptions thrown to tight ends. And Monken is going to be not only incented to throw more to the tight ends because the results have been great, or to scheme it that way, and Lamar is going to be incented to do it more, but he's also going to probably be forced to, because they don't have as many weapons at wide receiver that appear ready to go. We don't know what Tez Walker is going to be this year, so hopefully 105 plus would be good. He increases as a play action threat with additional read steps attributable to the Henry Jackson combo. You know, we haven't talked about Derrick Henry here. Probably he's the most important player in terms of effectiveness of the tight ends this year, because the Henry Jackson duo, if it works out, and there's real reasons to be concerned about that in terms of tread wear and whatnot, but if it works out, then it will be make the tight ends an absolutely devastating play action weapon.
Right. And regardless of whether or not Derek has the ball in his hand, I mean, you better believe he's going to be something that you have to take into account. So it's funny, we've gone almost 40 minutes and we hadn't even mentioned King Henry's name, which is hard to believe. But that speaks to, one, what this episode's about, first and foremost, but two, just how much else there is around him. But I'm with you. There is no more important piece to that offensive puzzle aside from eight.
I got a little bit more for the good season, then we'll go to the great here. I'd say he returns to 8.5 yards per target. He was at 8.9 this last year, so he's going to, I would expect a little bit of regression, but still to be good. He keeps connection with Lamar on extended plays, remains a fine run and pass blocker, and he's in the discussion as one of the top tight ends in the AFC, at least, particularly among the analysts who value balanced plays. I don't care about anybody who's just looking at yardage. I honestly don't. I don't value their opinion very highly. I don't care about anybody who just looks at tight ends as touchdown machines or red zone threats. Andrews has got to do it all for this team in a lot of ways. He's got to take away defenders. He's got to be a good blocker. He is all those things, and he's paid to do all those things. And the Ravens really need to convert on that. But that's a good season for Mark Andrews.
Love it. So great season for Mark would obviously be 17 games. You're healthy for a postseason run, something that he wasn't ready for last year until the AFC title game, as we mentioned. Respecting what you just said, there's much more than just receiving yards, but you end up having a 1,000-plus yard receiving season. If you're 5 or 6 touchdowns for a good season, then maybe you're somewhere in that 7 to 10 range. You stay healthy. Can't make that, you know, can't stress that enough. You continue to be a willing, able, and effective blocker. You're somebody who can coexist with Isaiah Likely in those multiple two tight end sets. You're a factor and a consistent yards after the catch guy. You know, ultimately, you kind of just shift right back into what you were pre-injury, and obviously continue to be a reliable pass catcher. I think that would represent a great season for Mark.
That is more than fair. And I like what you did there, because you put more onus on him for the group success as a whole. Of course, you move up in management, you start getting more and more bonuses for the levels across from you and other divisions in the organization and whatnot. That's normal. And that should apply to Andrews as well, big time here. A great season. Monken embraces much more 12 personnel, as well as the usage of Andrews, likely Kolar and Ricard, I'm going to include in this group, that maximizes their contributions. And I'm going to say, for Andrews to have a great year, I think those four combined need to get about 1,500 yards. I don't think it's out of the range. They had 1,094 last year with a fairly limited snap share, a target share, I should say. 14 touchdowns, I would put for the group. They had 13 in 2023, so that's not out of line. Andrews improves his per-snap productivity with yards per target of 9+. That'd be a slight step forward from this last year, which would be very good, and a passer rating of 115+ personally on his targets. That means it's still a drop of 20 points from last year, but I'm telling you, that would be a great season again if you were able to do that. The Ravens like the combined productivity so much that Andrews and Likely are both retained for 2025, despite the cost and the desire to trade them. Because I'm not even sure which one is likely to be gone, but I think that either of them is a chance. Andrews has very little trade value, I would think, at this point in his career. So you won't get a first-round pick for him if you trade him at draft time 25. Yeah, but Likely, you might. He might have that sort of value coming out of this season. And so it's going to be an Orlando Brown or Marquise Brown situation that they're going to really want to decide a year early. Are we keeping this guy? And I think the best situation is that they're so integral to what Lamar does and the Ravens offense, and they're successful again. They don't want to let either go.
And at some point here, you got to put on your business hat if you're Isaiah, which, you know, those former Ravens that you mentioned certainly had theirs on at that time. Mark's had multiple contracts in this league. You know, he's gotten top of the line money. This is a big year for him in terms of building, obviously, on what he's done the past 2 years, but ultimately setting himself up for a really nice Mark Andrews-esque second NFL contract. And to your point, I'll be very, very curious to see if this ends up being the last year that those two are running mates.
Well, Bobby, just a complete pleasure to do this with you in terms of talking over these two players. Tell folks where they can find your show with Sarah and talk football with you online if they want to.
Yeah, Ken, I appreciate it. You know, Sarah and I always appreciate just what you do on a daily basis. You know, anytime we want to dig into the analytical side of the game, between the lines, the X's and O's, you're our guy. So appreciate you, and I'm always glad to return the favor. But Sarah Ellison and I, we host a daily show. It's called The Vault on YouTube and across audio-only platforms. It's 12-1. We moved into the live format during free agency this past March, and we don't see ourselves moving at all. It's just so much of a better lifestyle, and I think people kind of appreciate being able to tap in during a lunch hour, at least on the East Coast. So 12-1 Eastern, Monday through Friday, you can check out me and Sarah on The Vault. And then I have a personal YouTube channel as well, where I'll do like short form content that's just like single monologue type of stuff. And that's the Bobby Baltimore YouTube channel. So I appreciate you, Ken, and I hope you have a great summer. I know we'll do this again.
All right. Thanks, Bobby. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. I'm looking to do a concerns series entering camp. If you have a concern about the Baltimore Ravens, and what fans that really follow this team don't have three or four concerns with an incredibly deep roster still, but have some concerns, I want to hear from you. Pick your concern. It's going to be, I have to narrow them a little bit, so we can't redo the Ravens' entire passing game and whatnot. It has to be something specific, scheme-wise, that they maybe don't do. Hit me up with that, and I'll get you on the schedule for that. If you want to do a recollection series, same thing. Give me your player. I'll set him aside for you. Bobby, thanks again for coming on.
All right, Ken. Appreciate you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.